it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. Back by popular request, we have got the Cricketing Hall of Fame. Our mailbag has been lit up with many requests for... when are we doing the next episode? We really want to see a Kiwi in the lineup. And Bordy, I'm sure, is not going to disappoint this evening as we count down number 60 to 56 on the Top Order Podcast, or actually more aptly, Michael Baldwin Cricketing Hall of Fame. Coming up after the swish. Bordy, so it's been such a long time since we've done one of these. Let's just recap the format here. So we're going to count down cricketers 60 to 56 in our 100...
Top Order Podcast.
Top Order Podcast Cricketing Hall of Fame, compiled by Michael Xavier Ferdinand Baldwin. And we're going to put 6 minutes on the clock for each player. So we can't exhaust more than 6 minutes talking about a specific player. Who have we got? We've got a black cap legend, haven't we, at number 60, you're going to tell me. But who have we got at number 60?
Well, we don't have any black caps in this one. So New Zealand listeners, stay with us for the next half an hour as we talk about non-New Zealand great cricketers. All that means is that the two that are left in the Top Order Podcast Men's Test Cricket Hall of Fame are in the top 55. That's what it means. You've got two great New Zealand cricketers still to come in the Top Order Podcast Hall of Fame, in the top 55. How can you not like that?
And I'm pretty sure all of these players have been to New Zealand at some point.
Yeah. Most of them have. At least the ones in this list will have. So at number 60, from South Africa, wicketkeeper batter, tremendous white ball cricketer, but underrated as a test cricketer, I believe. Start the clock, Binksy, if you could. 6 minutes on the clock for AB de Villiers. 114 test matches, 8,765 runs at an average of 50.66. with 2,200. So a wicketkeeper batsman, a part-time wicketkeeper batter, but still a wicketkeeper batter that averaged 50 in test cricket, 2,200s, 46 50s, an average above replacement player of plus 8. So he was 8 runs better than all the other batters, effectively, in his era. Captained his country, wicket-kept, batted in the top order, opening batter to start his test career, and then sort of became a middle-order batter and test cricketer. Tremendous white ball cricketer. What comes to mind first when you think about AB de Villiers? Is it test cricket or is it white ball cricket?
Well, that's the thing. It's completely white ball cricket for me. When I think about him, it's all of those memories are with a white ball and coloured clothing. I have to say, you know, we don't do anywhere near as much research as you when we're, you know, until we're kind of leading up to the week of recording this podcast of these Hall of Fames. And you go on and you look at AB de Villiers' stats and it's kind of a surprise to see that his test stats were just so remarkable.
Yeah, let's just recap a couple of those. So averaged 57 plus as the designated wicketkeeper for South Africa, 48 as the batter. He averaged 63 in matches won and 33 in matches lost. So absolutely crucial cog in that South African side. He batted for 78 innings in test cricket before recording his first duck. He leads all test cricketers in that regard. He has 50s in 12 consecutive test matches. That's first all time. He has the most catches in a test match. That's 11. And also the most dismissals in a test match, and that's 11. And he has a higher average. I know you like this stat, Binksy. A higher average away from home than he does at home. So he averages 47.4 at home and 50.7 away. So a tremendous cricketer in terms of the stats desk.
Yeah, I'm happy you picked up that away from home thing, because I had a look through his highest scores and the locations which he scored those highest scores. So his top seven go like this: the UAE, India, West Indies, England, Australia, UAE again, and then South Africa. So he scored all his big runs overseas. It's something great to see.
In all different parts of the world, like
exactly.
Say.
And we were talking about, was it Virat Kohli or Babar Azam, who we were talking about averaging 50 in, you know, those two formats. He's doing that, and he's comfortably above those as well. Here's another stat that I thought, you know, you rattled off his stats there, but I found a cool one as well. I've got him down as the only player in the history of Test cricket to score 100 and get 10 dismissals.
That must be 100% true, because I think there's not very many keepers who have 10 dismissals. He's got 11 and holds
the
world record.
And he scored 100 in the first innings of that test.
And he scored 100 in that game. That's a good get from you, Raj. That's a good stat work.
Yeah, look, I think what comes to mind with De Villiers is just extreme talent. There seemed to be nothing the guy couldn't do. You know, he can sing, he can play guitar, he was a fantastic hockey player. He's just one of those guys that you kind of like, mate, you play international cricket, you can sing, you can play guitar, you probably could have played international rugby and hockey. Can you let someone else be good at something?
Yeah, he's like the Hugh Jackman of sport, isn't he?
Give away one of those things to someone a little less fortunate than yourself. And from a cricketing perspective, though, I'm going to be controversial here. He's a guy that I don't really remember a lot. And particularly for me, Test cricket is, you know, the thing that I'm probably most passionate about. And his record against England is actually 8 points below his record for South Africa. So I think averaged just over 50 in Test cricket, averaged just over 40 against England. So I don't actually recall him being as great as he was across his career in the cricket that I would have seen of him. And probably the other thing I'd say, I don't think he kept wicket enough in terms of helping to balance the side. And look, it's always difficult because you don't know what's going on from a political perspective, from an injury perspective. It was the same with Brendan McCullum with a chronic back injury, for example. But I often
they also had De Kock for a good chunk of that career.
I think he had a bad back as well, though, Abbie de Villiers.
Yeah, I would have probably just liked to have seen him, like I guess a lot of the great keepers that I look up to, like an Ian Healy. They would have played through any injury to balance their side, batting wherever and donning the gloves. So that would be my take, but undoubtedly a magnificent record.
I'm glad you mentioned that you didn't remember him, because you and I were talking prior to recording, Stuart, about what we remember about Abbie de Villiers, and you raised the same kind of point in that he is such a good white ball cricketer that we don't remember his test exploits as being all that special. But you have to go back and you have a look at his record, and he averages 50.6. He's got 22 test hundreds. It's an incredible record.
Yeah, happy you brought that up, because when I think about Abbie de Villiers, I remember some great IPL innings, but the one that really stands out in my mind is the runs he scored in the semi-final 2015
World Cup
at Eden Park. In all honesty, he probably should have won that game for them if the rain hadn't come around. But, that's what I remember, those great white ball innings from AB.
Yeah, and I suppose that's where his will, you know, I guess, and if you're thinking about this in, you know, 5-10 years' time, I wonder if that will be his legacy. I mean, the only test innings that I remember vividly is the one that's so out of character where he batted for so long with Fuff to save that test against Australia in 2012 or whenever that was. So remarkably, that game, I kind of thought him and Fuff, in my memory, him and Fuff saved that game, but he got out with about 50 overs, 60 overs still to go. And it was actually Jacques Callis batting seven who came in and put on another big partnership with Fuff. But there goes the bell.
So we'll move on to number 59 in the list. We go to Dunedin for this one. No, sorry, listeners, we don't. We actually stay in the same country, don't we, for number 59?
Yeah, we do. An opening bat for South Africa. And just an incredible story, I think. behind this guy. Graham Smith, 117 test caps for Graham Smith for the Proteas, 9,265 runs batting at the top of the order at an average of 48.25. Higher score of 277, 27 test hundreds, that ranks 17th all time. His 9,265 runs ranks 16th all time. He's at 38 test 50s. And he had 8 test wickets, actually. He's got more test wickets than I thought he would have. And a best bowling performance in an innings of 2 for 145. So he got a couple of wickets, but also went for some tap. I mean, his peak series, he averaged 80 against England in 2003, averaged 84 in the West Indies in 2005, and again against England in South Africa, averaged 61 in a series there. So his peak series, he was right up there. But I think the first and foremost, we have to talk about the captaincy, the leadership for Graham Smith, 117 tests, 109 tests as captain.
And how have you sort of taken that into consideration in terms of where he is ranking wise? Because, you know, we'll talk about players that have got better records, or we have talked about players who have had better batting records than him that aren't as high on the list. So how have you weighted that? And I guess, you know, longevity as a captain, win percentage, all those kind of things. How have you taken that into account?
Subjectively, there's no objective reference for it. I haven't made up a number and put it against his name. But
well, there's one objective record that he's got the most test wins as captain.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, you and I, again, we're talking about this just beforehand. I don't know if that record will ever be beaten. He's got 53 test wins as captain.
He's got 109 tests as captain out of 117. So firstly, that percentage of tests as captain, I don't think will ever be beaten. And the number of tests as captain, 109, I don't think that will ever be beaten either. Or if it will, it'll be by a guy who only plays test cricket and plays it for 20 years. That's a long, long test career, playing 5 or 6 tests a year or whatever it is as test captain. So I think those records are safe for now. He's got a great win-to-loss ratio. He wins 48% of his tests. His win-to-loss ratio is 1.8 wins for every loss that he took as captain. So all of those records are outstanding. They're not top five, but they're outstanding records, particularly considering the number of test matches that he played. So for me, a huge boost, easily 10 or 15 places, whatever you want to call it, just based purely on his leadership, because he took over the captaincy as a 21-year-old. It was a controversial appointment to start with. You know, not many people wanted Graham Smith to be captain of that South African side, but just through almost sheer brutality, sheer force of will, he dragged that South African side along with him. And even as a young player in amongst a whole bunch of senior players, showed them the way and just showed them how mentally tough and resilient he was. I mean, battered with a broken hand famously in 2013-14, I think it was, against
2009.
Australia. Was that 09, was it? That series against Mitchell Johnson. So look, the man was as tough as they come. And, you know, all of my notes on the eye test for Graham Smith were all around just how ugly his
I'm
style
was. I'm glad you
was.
Said that, because I thought you were going a different route then. And
no.
I was going to jump across the table, to be honest.
No. It was, I've got two words, that grip, and then brutal but effective. I mean, he's the classic claw hammer in your carpenter's toolbox, right? He's the one that you want if you're banging nails into walls. You don't want a delicate carpenter's ball peen hammer to create perfect dovetail joints. You want something like Graham Smith's claw
Welcome
hammer.
Welcome to every carpenter's world.
I wondered what that extension cord was doing outside.
Yeah, every tradesman needs a hammer like Graham Smith. Look, not brilliant if you need to do some fine carpentry, but I think it's because of that brutality, because of that ugliness of his style. You were just glued to watching him bat and seeing if he actually could, having lined the ball up to hit everything to mid-on, actually could hit the ball through the offside. And miraculously, he did on occasion. And look, the mental strength of the man is so impressive.
And that brutality extended to England captains as well. He ended 3 careers of England captains. I think Nasser Hussain, Michael Vaughan and Andrew Strauss all resigning after losses to South Africa. So basically my 3 favourite England captains. So I really don't like the bloke, eh?
Yep.
I'm happy you mentioned that 2009 series, because I didn't even look up Graham Smith's stats or records when I knew we were going to talk about him. I just went and watched that highlights of that innings, because it really gave me goosebumps. And I'm just thinking about what that did for the playing group, seeing their leader go out there and do something like that. Imagine if he had pulled it off. Would have been one of the greatest escapes in history, I think, for Test cricket. But it still gives me goosebumps. The other part, or the other aspect of Graham Smith, is that he left a massive, massive hole at the top of the order. Mm. Even though you say he looked ugly, his batting looked ugly. He really was a stalwart of South African cricket and played his game. He made you bowl where he wanted you to bowl it, and he left everything else that wasn't required. So that mental strength and his leadership for me were massive.
And look, got to get a New Zealand plug in here. Every time I think about Graham Smith, I actually think about a couple of incidents. I think about Chris Martin, just having him on toast on a few series over here. I sort of had to Google Chris Martin, Graham Smith, because that's all I remembered, and actually discovered that he is Chris Martin's number one wicket in Test cricket. Martin got him out 8 times. And then also just thinking about one of those series, I think it was an ODI series, where him and Stephen Fleming just had massive dust up, that they really tried to get stuck into him, I think, when he was a younger captain, and really rattled him in some of those moments. So, yeah, but, you know, like you said, absolute quality player. And you think of that South African team at that time, and they were a force, and, you know, New Zealand's always struggled to beat South Africa. So, yeah, very good leader.
Well, the timer going off, an opportune moment right there. We are actually genuinely going to Christchurch now. Unfortunately, it's not Christchurch, Canterbury, but Christchurch, Barbados, which is the home of the next person on our list. Baldy, tell us more.
Gee, that's really good from you, Binksy. That's great research. So from Christchurch, Barbados, Joel Garner, 58 test matches, just the 58 test matches for the West Indies, 259 wickets in those 58 tests, which seems incredible, just jumps off the page, at an average of 20.97 and a strike rate of 50.8. Best bowling in a match, 9 for 108. So no 10-fers, but 7 5-fers, and an average above replacement player of plus 9.06, or if you're a bowler, minus 9.06, which is good enough for fifth all time, and his bowling average of 20.95, also fifth all time amongst bowlers that I considered for the Test Cricket for the Test Cricket Hall of Fame. For the Top Order podcast, just a couple of peak series here. 83-84, Australia in the West Indies, 31 wickets, an average of 16, strike rate of 40. 1984, England in England, 29 wickets at 18, strike rate of 45. And then the following summer, back in the West Indies against England, 27 wickets in 5 tests, an average of 16, and a strike rate of 34.7. So strike rate really good, and obviously because all of those other West Indies fast bowlers were also present, and not as many 5-fers and 10-fers in his career.
Fun one to go back and look at the YouTube footage, wasn't it? Jeez, honestly, I just don't know how you hit. How do you hit a bowler like him that's 6'8" tall, and just that he was bowling balls that were on a length, and they're just rearing up and hitting, thudding into people's chests, and then he'd just come in with this huge Yorker. I would have absolutely been terrified facing him, and I would have just not enjoyed any single moment of that experience.
You and I wouldn't have lasted long, I think, against Joel Garner. It would have been true. One ball, maybe two, and we're either in hospital or dismissed, stumps flying. But it wasn't just tailenders. It was guys like Greg Chappell, who averaged 53-54 in Test cricket, who we'll get to in this Hall of Fame. Joel Garner made him look like a goose on a number of occasions, and Greg Chappell was wearing deliveries in the arm, under the ribs, in the shoulders. You know, so those YouTube rabbit holes of West Indies fast bowling in the 1980s, some of them are really worth an hour of your time to just go in and deep dive into some of that, because it's just terrifying to watch.
Look, absolutely terrifying, and not something I think any of us would fancy, apart from maybe Raj, who was pretty good against the short ball back in his pump. So, yeah, maybe it'd have hooked him off his nose. The thing that stood out for me in doing a little bit of research on Joel Garner is actually his one-day record. So I don't know whether this still stands, but according to, you know, the most laudable of sources, Wikipedia, he is still ranked as the highest ever ranking one-day international bowler, based on them going back and doing the same sort of algorithms as they do now to come up with those ratings. So that, you know, that record alone, and 37th all-time on their test rankings. You know, when you look at 146 wickets in ODIs at 18.8, that is the stuff that under 11 school cricket dreams are made of, isn't it?
Yep.
Averaging 18 with the ball. So and just look ferocious, but with a bit of grace as well. You know, the way that he bowled, and I think, yeah, going back through those West Indian fast bowling YouTube clips is it's good fun that you're not down the other end.
I guess, you know, we obviously talked about his incredible average, talked about, you know, he's averaging about 5 wickets a test, which is also very impressive in historic terms. You mentioned it in the lead up in the intro that he doesn't have those 5-fers and no 10-fers. Mm. Did you have to knock some points off him there? I know we've talked in previous podcasts about just the core of that West Indian bowling attack and how they not only had four quicks that they played all the time, but they had five or six really that they could kind of cycle in and out if they needed to.
Have you factored that in, Bordy? Because that was a question I was going to ask you. You obviously raised the point, but the likes of Roberts, Colin Croft, Marshall, Ambrose and Walsh coming a little bit later.
Patterson,
can't really take 10 for very often in a game when you've got that kind of armoring.
No, you can't. And when you're comparing guys who have got multiple 10 fors in their career, four, five, six, whatever it happens to be, you know, guys like Wasim and Wakar, who took 10 fors and 5 fors at a regular basis, from a statistical point of view, those guys get a boost and Joel Garner gets, you know, put down a peg. But what I did is I subjectively had a look at the sum of Joel Garner's career and his average and his strike rate in particular and went, actually, you know, the purely stats-based algorithm doesn't do this guy justice because it doesn't take into consideration, as it should, the quality of the bowlers around him. Very difficult to do in context without having kind of run your eye over it. So that's why guys like Marshall, Holding, Joel Garner in particular, those three in particular, get a little bit of a boost compared to some of their contemporaries. And I kind of discount, when I'm looking at it and judging it with the eye test, those 5 and 10 wicket hauls because those guys were around. And I wrote here, unanswerable question, how much better would either any of those guys have been if it was just two of them instead of three, four, five, six? You know, would we have seen a jump in number of wickets, a marked improvement in 5 fors and 10 fors? Would we be talking about them as one of the 5 or 10 best bowlers of all time rather than one of the sort of 20 best bowlers of all time, which is kind of where he is at the moment?
And look, to kind of round out, I know this is, you know, this might sound a bit flippant, but do you guys think that there's any chance that the batter saw it out of the side screen? Because I just don't. I think that he's too high, isn't he?
Oh, he definitely bowled above the side screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can't remember if it was Barry Richards, but it was one of those guys who was talking about looking at the release points of when the bowler lets the ball go. And they said that they would judge length based on whether they were releasing the ball before their arm got to the vertical or slightly after. Now, the ability to pick that up in and of itself is incredible to me because the arm goes over so fast that I can't see the ball come out of the hand most Saturdays. But that's the kind of skill level that they had. But they mentioned that, of course, with a bowler like Joel Garner, it was irrelevant because the ball was above the side screen and you couldn't pick it up anyway. So, you know, they had even less time to pick up the delivery because they had to wait for it to come down below the line of the side screen and then it disappeared into the deck and then it reared up off them, at them off a length and smacked them in the chest.
Big bird, eh?
Absolutely. The timer going off as we eulogise about Joel Garner. We've got a decent new ball attack on this episode of the Cricketing Hall of Fame. Look, it wouldn't be a Cricketing Hall of Fame if we weren't going to include an Australian higher than he deserves to be. So, Bordy, let's go into who we've got on the list now.
Let's go, boys, because if you're gonna claim he's higher than he deserves to be, we're going to have a fun 6 minutes. Put it on the clock for my man, Pat Cummins. 38 test matches in his career so far, and I think that's relatively up to date. 185 wickets at an average of 21.19. So we just go back to Garner was 20.97. Cummins is 21.19. Garner's strike rate 50.8. Pat Cummins' strike rate 45.9. He has 110 for 13 5 fors and an average above replacement player of 8.78, which puts him just behind Joel Garner actually in sixth all time. Bowling average ninth all time.
Must have got a hell of a bump for his captaincy then.
He does. He gets a big bump for his leadership. We'll talk about that. And also strike rate ninth all time. Best figures in a match, 10 for 62 is 110 for. Right, let's go. I'm prepared to take you all on. Pat Cummins, as his career stands now, 57th, and I'm sticking with it.
Okay, here we go. Pat Cummins has played 38 tests. Your cutoff here is 150 wickets, isn't it? So he's only just past that mark.
Yep, he qualifies.
You genuinely think that if he finishes his career and does not play another test, he will be regarded nearly in the top 50 players of all time?
Yep, 100%. Because if he stopped playing cricket right now, he has the ninth best average and the ninth best strike rate of all time. There are something like...
In the players you considered, which doesn't include someone like Shane Bond, who doesn't have
enough wickets.
Doesn't have the wickets.
Yes. Doesn't have the wickets.
But
right?
That's what I mean.
Like, yes. But if he stopped playing cricket now, yes, he finishes with an average better than Glenn McGrath, I believe, and a strike rate better than Glenn McGrath, who took 560-odd wickets and probably is in the top, say, 30 bowlers of all time. Look, you can't go past ninth in strike rate, ninth in average. I'm sorry. That is significant. And sixth in average above replacement player. So he is better compared to his peers than other guys who have achieved those same marks. So Alan Davidson was like third in average, but he slipped to 15th when you take into account the average above replacement player. He actually is better than his actual average suggests that he is.
I'll actually jump into bat for Bixie, for Baldy here.
I'm going home.
Because I can see Lippy and Bixie just waiting to jump on him. But his story's yet to be written, right? He's got such a long time to go. I think that I'm a massive fan of the longevity, actually putting those numbers up. But I think he's going to do it, and I think he's actually going to get better. Because you see how he's gone through his first little tenure here as captain. You see he's the kind of guy who puts the team on his back, and he plays better to bring the team up. And I think that he's just going to go better and better. He's just devastating with the ball. He's got that mental toughness to actually come back from those injuries that he had early on in his career, which has significantly shortened his career. He's, what, 28 now?
Yeah, he's 28 now, just about to turn 29, I think.
It felt like that it was never going to happen for him, didn't it? 100%. I thought he was going to be a player that we always went, oh, what if those injuries didn't happen for him?
Yeah, because he debuted 2011, I think. It might have even been in South Africa, perhaps, something like that. Played a couple of test matches, got injured, had a chronic back injury for several years, was out of the wilderness for 6 years from test cricket, only came back in 2017. So all of this achievement has only happened in the last 4 or 5 years. You're right, Raj, he's yet to write the rest of his story. As it stands, I've got him at 57, but there's plenty of room for him to move up if he continues to improve.
Just the fact that he was able to remodel his action and then come back and still bowl 145k plus, in top 10 for averages, top 10 for strike rate, I think it's incredible, and he's probably going to have a really, really good story by the time he's finished.
Can we continue that by where do you think he will finish? Because I think that's quite an interesting debate in terms of, like, let's not think about the world. Let's put it on Australian bowlers, because there has been a lot of Australian, a really good Australian seam bowlers. Mm. You know, do you think he's going to be in the conversation with Lilly, McGrath? Do you genuinely think in 5 years' time? I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's got that opportunity.
If he doesn't get hurt, yes, 100%. He will 100%. He's played, 5 years of test cricket. He's now got 185 test wickets. If he plays another 5 years of test cricket at his peak, 28 to 33, I think he takes easily, again, that many wickets. So we're talking about 370 wickets now in his test career. We're talking about a guy who's probably still going to average less than 25, 26 with the ball, even allowing for some regression towards the mean, if you like. And a guy who probably, you know, if you've got Stark and Hazelwood and now these young guys coming up, he'll have plenty of support as he gets older to have young guys coming in and doing some more of that sort of grunt work, if you like, and he can just be a spearhead of the attack and be a partnership breaker, rather than a guy who, against India last summer, had to do all the work and literally, as you say, Raj, put the team on his back. Binksy.
Yeah, I think it's too early to, you know, mate, you've got into the DeLorean there and gone well into the future to write the rest of his career. We talked on the previous podcast about Rassie van der Dussen averaging 75 in ODI cricket, and that the sample size of just over 30 games was too small for us to really make a judgment. I don't doubt Pat Cummings' ability, but I've got to say that I think him this high on the list with what is a relatively infant career in test cricket, some injury early in his career, the fact that he's going to now be captain and have that workload of bowling and having to play through series where he's perhaps not completely fit. Look, I hope for, you know, people listening to this in the Top Order podcast time capsule in 10 years' time, that it's played forward the way that you've done for Pat Cummings. But I've got to say, I don't think he should be this high on the list. So that brings us to the final person on this week's list, number 56. Baldy, who are we talking about?
This one might be a little bit controversial, and I was prepared to go to bat for Pat Cummins against all comers, but I'm prepared to listen to arguments and conversation around this guy in terms of how you guys see him, and we may have a difference of opinion here. But we're talking about Pakistan batter Mohammad Yusuf, formerly Yusuf Johana. 90 test matches for Pakistan, 7,530 runs at a batting average of 52.29, high score of 223, 24 hundreds, 33 50s, and a rate of hundreds. He made 15 hundreds for every 100 innings that he played, which ranks 19th of all time. 21 50s for every 100 innings that he played ranks 23rd all time. And his average above replacement player is plus 9.51, which is also in well inside the top 30 for batters we considered for the Hall of Fame. Interestingly enough, and I've gone through a few of these stats now, only bowled in one innings, didn't take a test wicket. Most of these guys have got kind of one or two test wickets to their name, but no test wickets for Mohammad Yusuf. So, yeah, stats galore for Mohammad Yusuf. But one of those players, I think, who kind of went under the radar when I was compiling this list and when I wrote down a bunch of names without having looked at the statistics, he certainly wasn't on the list. But then I went and looked at his peak series, 06-07 against the West Indies, 600 runs at 133. England in England, 06, 631 runs at 90.4. And, of course, also in 05-06, 461 runs against India at an average of 92.2. All of those, of course, happened in 2006, where Mohammad Yusuf set the world record for 1,788 runs in a calendar year. Still hasn't been beaten. So shortly after converting from Yusuf Yohana, one of the very few Christian players who played for Pakistan, converted to Islam and then had tremendous success shortly after his conversion there. But look, a tremendous career in probably one of their best best middle orders that they've ever had, alongside Inzamam and Yunus Khan as well. But a little bit controversial in that I don't think that he is as widely regarded as a great test cricketer as maybe his statistics suggest.
I'll throw a few things at you which I guess I spotted in his stats that I guess made me think that maybe why that's the case. And I suppose when you look at his stats and you dive a little deeper, you find that he only averaged under 45 away from home, 65 at home, 72 in neutral, which is generally the UAE. He only averaged 29 against Australia, only averaged 29 against South Africa and Sri Lanka as well, who were a very strong side at points in his career. Then you look on the other side, averaged 250 against Bangladesh, obviously small sample size, but 100 against the West Indies, 68 against Zimbabwe, and 62 against those other minnows, England. So, you know, like, you know, when you look through those lineups, he's really cashed in against the weaker sides and at home. And, you know, he was obviously a very good player. I mean, he scored a double 100 here in New Zealand, was actually much you talk about players that have got one test wicket. He was Mark Richardson's only test wicket that I'm sure most people listening to this podcast have seen the viral video that went round of Richardson's celebration. But yeah, just I guess someone who really performed at home, and we've talked about it in the past. There's nothing actually to be criticised about that. We talked about it with, I think, Ranganathan and you know, plenty of other players who've dominated at home. So, you know, I think that's possibly why he's not ranked really, really up there in test circles.
What's his in terms of volume? He's about 1,000 less than the cutoff, Mark Waugh.
So Mark Waugh had 8,000, almost exactly.
Okay, so about 500 less. Yep. I guess for me, I don't mind that trade-off. He's got a little bit less in volume because I think when he scored runs, he really added substance to an innings. There were hundreds of substance. He really, you know, he scored big daddy hundreds. He got 900s over 100 that were totaled over 150. Mm. And then 50% of his test hundreds, just to kind of counter your numbers there, Stu, 50% of his hundreds were actually scored overseas, away from home, and 50 were at home. That's the other half of the equation there. But in that 1 year where he went crazy and scored a lot of runs, 2006, averaged 99.33. It's the closest thing we've seen to Don Bradman in a long time. I have no problem with him being this high on the list, because I think the innings that he played were of high substance and won games for Pakistan.
Just to pick up on that point around hundreds, that conversion rate or that frequency of scoring hundreds, 19th all time. But in terms of modern players, only Smith, Sangakkara, Hayden, Callis, Kohli, Kane, Tendulkar and Yunus scored hundreds more frequently than Mohammad Yusuf did. So in terms of modern players, he is as frequent a scorer of centuries as they come, really. And there's, you know, he's ahead of Lara, he's ahead of some really, really big names on that list who've played in the same kind of era as he did.
Yeah, the thing for me with that fantastic year he had as well, that they were looking at that stack, through the Ashes series because Joe Root was pretty close to the number of runs. But when they actually started to put that list up, the guys that had scored that many runs were at averages of 50 and 55. And I think Root was around the 60 mark for the calendar year. So to be that high ahead of it as well, that, you know, that sort of period of concentrated brilliance, I think can't be understated. And Bordy, you sort of bemoaned his lack of test wickets. He took a one-day international wicket. He only bowled two balls in one day. So he's up there for all-time strike rates in the ODIs as well.
Excellent. Small sample size, but right on there.
Look, we like a small sample size. We just talked about Cummins, didn't we?
Exactly. Look, the only thing that I wanted to ask is an unanswerable question for you guys is, like, he batted a little bit with Inzamam in his career, and he batted obviously quite a bit with Yunus. Do you think those guys made each other better in that lineup? Similar to that discussion we had with Dravid and Lakshman in particular, being made better by the quality of the players around him.
Well, there's the bell, but look, to finish that conversation, I think it always does, and if you ask me. I think, you know, you look at someone like Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor, when they're not running each other out, they bat really well together, and when you've got two absolute class players, of course that's gonna help, and it's not like a bowling situation where they sort of take wickets off each other. They can help each other, and they can help blunt attacks, and they can just pile on the runs. So
similar challenge here in terms of Inzamam with the run outs. I'm sure he would have been worth a couple of points in the down degree in terms of having run out his partners unnecessarily over the course of his career. I'm sure I've got no stats to back that up, but I'm sure it's true.
Awesome. Well, guys, that does wrap up this episode of the Hall of Fame. Please do log on to our website, www.thetoporderpodcast.com. Find our email address and let us know whether you want to see more of the Hall of Fame in your feed or more of our random ramblings in This Week in Cricket in your podcast feed. But for now, it's good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. And we'll see you very soon on the next episode of the Top Order Podcast. Good night.
Social Podcast Network.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.